Hello, and welcome back to the Profiling Podcast series, introducing you to the members of the International Water Association's Digital Water Programs Steering Committee. For those of you joining us for the first time today, the IWA Digital Water Program is on a mission to provide a platform for water utilities to explore and share experiences on their digital water journey. The program has provided roadmaps and guidance that will help water utilities in making the transition to the next generation of smart water systems and fulfill the need for improved resiliency to secure and sustainably manage water resources now and in the future. The Steering Committee conceptualizes and produces these and other outputs of the program, including white papers, books, webinars, and podcast series like this one. I am Erin Jordan, Strategic Programs Officer at the IWA, coordinating the Digital Water Program. And my guest today is Rachel Pellitz, Executive Director of the Acquire Institute. Rachel has been a member of the Steering Committee since 2022. And has been working in the digitization of water and sanitation in low and middle income country context subgroup. She also co-organized the Pipes to Pixels workshop at the 2023 IWA Water and Development Congress and Exhibition in Kigali, Rwanda, with her fellow group members, Eunice Namirembe and Deepa Karthikeyan. Welcome to the podcast, Rachel.
Thanks, Erin. It's great to be here.
Wonderful. So let's jump right in. Can you please tell us who is Rachel?
Sure. Thanks, Erin. Well, professionally, I'm the executive director of the Acquire Institute, a research and consulting nonprofit organization that's dedicated to advancing global health through universal access to safe drinking water and sanitation. And my background is in environmental engineering and public health. I initially studied at UC Berkeley in environmental engineering for a bachelor's, then went to MIT for a master's in environmental engineering, and also have a PhD from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine in England. I'm also based in the San Francisco Bay Area, so I'm a Californian, but also a global citizen. I've had the pleasure of living in 6 countries across 4 continents, including the US, Canada, England, Kenya, Zambia, and Australia. And I've also worked and traveled in over 20 countries. And then on a personal level, I'm also a mother, a wife, a daughter, a sister, and my family is also very important to me. So thanks, Erin.
So you mentioned that currently you are at Acquire right now, but before we get to Acquire, I want to hear about these countries and everything that you visited and how your career has blossomed over the years. So can you tell us what exactly got you started in the water sector?
Sure, I would love to. And you know, I can still remember the day that really ignited my interest in the water sector. And it was over 20 years ago when I was a first year undergrad at UC Berkeley and taking an engineering seminar series. And Professor Cara Nelson was talking about her research on sanitation in Mexico. And it was, you know, we were in this dark lecture room. She was showing us slides of toilets from Mexico. And it really reminded me of El Salvador, where I had just spent some time the previous summer. And, you know, one thing she said that really struck me that I still remember, and it was that a third of the global population has intestinal worms or parasites in their bellies. And, you know, that still blows my mind. And actually, I just looked this up recently, and that number hasn't really changed. If anything, it's grown. You know, I just looked up a statistic from the WHO that's, you know, over 40% of the world has intestinal worms. And, you know, for me, that was really a light bulb moment of these problems in the world. These public health issues are just so vast. And I think sometimes in higher income countries, we don't think about them, but they're really huge. Still, you know, learning, you know, from that lecture and then, you know, still today about the global access to water and sanitation. Currently, a quarter of the world doesn't have access to safe drinking water, and almost half of the people don't have a decent place to go to the bathroom or, you know, safe access to sanitation. It's, you know, just like, how is this possible today? You know, it's really mind-boggling how big these challenges are. And, you know, from that day forward, really, I thought, you know, this is a problem that I wanted addressed in my life. You know, this really huge global health issue of unsafe water and sanitation. And, you know, these are some of the biggest challenges of our time. We're only seeing they're increasing with climate shock. So from there, you know, right after that lecture, I went up to that professor, Dr. Carr Nelson, and wanted to work in her lab. I had the pleasure of getting to work with her on ultraviolet light disinfection of drinking water, both, you know, at UC Berkeley and then in Haiti as well. And then really my interest in this sector just grew from there, and, you know, ended up, as I mentioned, going to MIT, you know, working in India, working in Ghana when I was a student, and then, you know, moving to Canada, working internationally in Asia through an organization called COSS, the Center for Affordable Water and Sanitation Technology, and then, you know, continued on. But really, it was that day, you know, that day at UC Berkeley and that Professor Carr Nelson that really inspired me initially. And I, you know, I'm still in touch with her and very grateful for those opportunities I had early on in my career.
I don't think a lot of people think about intestinal worms. I like that you brought that here. But I want to find out from you, based on what you've seen when you first started in water and now, how would you describe the progress that has been made to address the global water challenges?
That's a really good question. And I think, you know, there's definitely been trends in the sector that have been encouraging, but there's also population growth. There's still, even just statistic I gave about intestinal worms, that hasn't really changed that much, which is somewhat sobering, really, right? But you know, we know that a lot of the population growth globally has happened in areas where there are more of these global health challenges. At the same time, though, we do see innovations. There's a lot of efforts to deworm populations, for example, but the water and sanitation side, there's a lot of efforts to do innovative solutions, you know, try new technologies, try new approaches. And I think, you know, kind of to bring us back to the digital water side, I think we're seeing a lot of progress in this area. You know, now we have more data available to us than we ever have before. And so I think there's a big potential to really make more progress on some of these challenges. So, you know, I'm very optimistic on where things are going.
That's good. Then this leads me now to what you're doing currently, because you've been contributing to the water sector for, as you said, for over 20 years. So now, in your current role as executive director at Aquia, what does that entail? What do you do at Aquia? What does Aquia do?
Yeah, thanks, Erin. Great to talk about Aquia because I'm very dear to my heart, of course. So I'm the executive director of Aquia. I oversee our strategic direction, vision, organizational growth. You know, I manage our board of directors. I manage our most senior staff. I've been with the organization for 11 and a half years now. Started more on the program side, on the technical side. As I mentioned, my background's in engineering, but took over as executive director a couple years ago. And I've really seen Aquia grow within my tenure here. And, you know, one thing that we're increasingly doing is delivering critical insights or, you know, data tools to help support informed decisions. So, you know, those may be policy decisions, program or financial decisions. Thinking about what are the tough water and sanitation questions and how can we do better and how can research help us get there? You know, through Aquia, we test new technologies, new approaches, new innovations, and generate evidence on what works and what doesn't. And then when we find something that works, let's innovate and make it even better and work with people on the ground, you know, both our own team and collaborative partners. So most of our work is in low resource settings, mostly in Africa and also Asia. And we're increasingly developing and using digital tools in our research. For example, I'd love to just talk a little bit about one of our projects. For example, water connections, piped water connections are often too expensive for the poorest populations. And there's a lot of interest in determining who should actually get subsidies for water connections. And so we've been developing different machine learning models to identify the poor in rural Ghana, comparing these to existing methods such as community consultations or asking communities who is poor. And we've used these machine learning models to develop a phone app that's essentially 14 simple questions to assess poverty, you know, that's now being tested by a water service provider in their program to see actually using this as a method to identify who should get subsidies. And, you know, we've also developed digital tools and dashboards to share water quality data with stakeholders. So is water safe to drink or not? To what extent is it chlorinated or, you know, has microbial contamination? Through one of our innovations through the Water Quality Assurance Fund, which is a water quality testing model that we're doing in Ghana and Kenya.
I want to ask you, where do you see the Institute in the next 5 to 10 years? What would you hope to be accomplished in that time?
A great question. I mean, you know, we have seen tremendous growth within our organization in the last few years. And that has been really exciting because I think we can do more. You know, there's a lot of interest in building better evidence in the water and sanitation sector, particularly in low-income settings. I think the use and interest in digital tools is only going to increase. As I mentioned earlier, more and more data is being available. I think there's, you know, there's still a lot of opportunities to make sure that that's being used and accessible and actionable, you know, for the right stakeholders. So, you know, I see us working more and more collaboratively, you know, with stakeholders, governments. You know, we already are, you know, we actually have, our team is in 7 countries and, you know, in all of those where we're working with, you know, directly with government authorities or other local groups. And, you know, I think that those partnerships will continue to be increasingly important for us.
I think as we continue collaborating, working with each other, crossing those lines to understanding each other's problems, I think that we will definitely be on our way with the water challenges. Collaboration, I think, is key, but obviously not just talking, but action, using actual innovative tools to address the challenges. So I want to ask you, you've mentioned that you've been using digital tools in your projects, specifically the project you just mentioned in Ghana, and I'm assuming that you hope to continue using them. So in your experience, how has digital helped you propel the aims of providing clean water and safe sanitation for everyone?
You know, your phrase about, you know, how is it, what's the action? I think that really speaks to me because that's something we think about a lot is, you know, the research, you know, and this is why, you know, myself and a lot of our team aren't in academia necessarily, because we wanted to be a little bit more practical or action oriented. And, you know, being at the Quiet Institute allows us to be there, right? To be a little more action oriented. So I think I'm really optimistic that we're on the cusp of a digital transformation in the water sector. You know, more and more data is available and we're still figuring out how to use it. But in rural Africa, for example, we still see a lot of primary data that's being collected in paper forms that's not being used to its full potential. You know, the report or the form that's filled out that sits on a shelf and collects dust. So another thing that Aquia is doing is we're developing Project W, and we've developed this centralized hub that searches web portals for relevant information, where we have almost 5,000 data sets. You know, and it's innovations like this that are bringing data together, you know, to maximize its use are really exciting for the sector. And I think this is something that we're increasingly using internally and are looking at, you know, eventually making this a external resource or, you know, maybe a public resource that others can use, and that we're really thinking about how we can better leverage secondary data that already exists, right? That's already out there. Yeah, I mean, we're also seeing a lot more interest in building evidence for WASH and data for decision making. I'm thrilled to see USAID has a new initiative, the Water Security, Sanitation, and Hygiene Data and Analytics Activity, which is focused on increasing data insights in the water and sanitation sector. And I also sit on the advisory council for that group. You know, so I think there's just more and more interest in this space, and I'm really look forward to seeing it grow.
Project W sounds like an excellent idea. Open source data is helping so many organizations, institutes, universities to actually conduct their research, go forward with their aims as well. So I will definitely be looking forward to see if Project W becomes public and open source, because I definitely believe it will help a lot of people. Now, I want to ask you a question. It's off script, but I'm sure it's easy for you to answer. Given all that you've seen, all that you've experienced, and now, what piece of advice would you give to an up-and-coming water and sanitation professional?
I love this question. Actually, I've just been thinking about this recently. You know, one thing that I really wish I had known earlier in my career is how important the professional relationships that you make are to not only your own career, but also making an impact. You know, and this is something, you know, I think earlier on in my career, networking just felt like a big scary word and, you know, very self-serving. And now I understand that we can really only do more and do our best if we work together and also know what others are doing, so that we can build upon existing knowledge and existing activities. And so, you know, that's something that I would advise, you know, those early on in your career to be thinking about, is building those relationships, making those connections. You never know. It's really been interesting in my own career. You know, somebody that interviewed for a job with Aquia 10 years ago is now someone that we're reporting to at USAID or at, you know, at another group, right? For example. And, you know, those things happen. And so I think you just never really know where people will end up in your life. But, you know, it's great to form those connections. And
I think that's great advice. As a young person, I find, well, I'll speak for myself. I'm quite shy when it comes to networking. So, and I know how important it is. So definitely for all the young water professionals who might be listening, throw the shyness away and go out there and approach the people that you know you want to work with. All right, Rachel, we are going to put the serious stuff one side. We're going to put it aside. We're going to talk about fun things. So when you are not doing all of the things that you do, what do you do to decompress?
Yeah, so I mean, I mentioned earlier that I'm a mom, so I do have two young daughters, age 3 and 6, and so I do spend a lot of time with them when I'm not working. You know, we love getting outdoors. We live in the beautiful part of the world in Marin County in California and in the Bay Area, with, you know, beautiful redwoods and oak trees, and, you know, so hiking and biking, mountain biking, some of my favorite things. I also love swimming, and, you know, so I joke that if I'm not working around water, then I'm actually in water, enjoying myself and for a swim. So that I love doing as well, and I find just so mentally relaxing too. I do. I actually really try to get out and exercise every day if possible. Doesn't always happen, but, you know, at least most days it does.
That's nice. Nice. Very relaxing. Final 60 seconds of the podcast. Tell us where we can connect with you and what we should look out from you for 2024 and beyond.
Well, you know, in the digital age, you know, probably one of the best ways to follow me or Aquia is, you know, through social media, you know, LinkedIn in particular. But, you know, we're also on Instagram and X, you know, formerly Twitter, and other social media. That's a great way. You know, our website, aquia.org, is, you know, another great resource. You know, and then we have our Aquia newsletter as well. There's a lot of outputs coming out around water safety, but also You know, we're doing some work around hydroclimate modeling through that work, water resources management. And so, and also professionalizing, you know, water services, different management models. So, you know, there's a lot going on. So I encourage you to stay in touch and please reach out. And yeah, it's great to be connected.
You definitely have a lot to look forward to for 2024. So guys, please just, you know, watch Rachel and Aquia's spaces on their socials. Rachel, we have come to the end of the podcast. And I want to thank you so much for giving your time and this absolutely enlightening discussion. It was a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thanks, Erin. It was a pleasure. And you're definitely welcome to come visit in California and see the redwoods. Love to have you. You're always welcome.
Don't tempt me. I'll take you up on that. Thank you to all of our listeners as well. Stay tuned as usual, and you can connect and engage with the Digital Water Program on IW Connect Plus and through our quarterly newsletters. Both links will be in the bio, as well as the links where you can connect with Rachel and follow Aquia's journey. So again, thank you, Rachel. Thank you to everyone listening. We wish you all the best. Goodbye.